Welcome to This Is Money. I'm Georgie Frost, and alongside me and editor Simon Lambert today is assistant editor Lee Boyce. And a huge win for the Conservative Party and for Boris Johnson. But what does victory mean for the pound in our pocket, the pound sterling itself, the economy, for Brexit, and for the future of the Labour Party and the union? Plenty to get through, and don't forget you can stay up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app. But the pound leapt as Boris Johnson's Conservatives headed for a thumping election victory. Sterling held big gains against the US dollar and the euro overnight as the exit polls proved to be accurate. So seats ebbing away for Labour. Lib Dem leader Jo Swinson, she stepped down after losing her seat. And SNP leader Nicola Sturgeon was a rather happy bunny. But first and foremost, I'll go to you, Simon, if that's all right. Your initial thoughts?
Well, sitting down to watch it last night on the television at home, we switched over at 10 o'clock and it was a moment of, what are we going to get? I must admit that we could probably trawl through the archives, actually, to find the conversation I think I remember having after Mr. Corbyn got the leadership of the Labour Party. He is the MP where I live. And I said that I thought that the great British public probably didn't want what he was selling. And I must admit, I've doubted myself a few times over the years since, but I still kind of thought that in general, whilst it may have appealed to a lot of people, overall, the UK isn't mad for socialism and didn't want the ideology that lay behind Corbynism and with John McDonnell. But there'd been an awful lot of new people registering to vote. And those new people registering to a vote were highly likely to be voting in one direction, which
young
made
people,
me,
you think,
young
just,
people, yeah, yeah. Which made me question, maybe something could happen. Maybe 2017 could be repeated and go a step further. But then there was also listening to the reports, talking to some friends actually who've just, you know, come back from there recently, who'd been talking to people as well, was that the North, they're not a fan of Corbyn. And this election was meant to be about Brexit. I'm not so sure this election was about Brexit. I think it was about Jeremy Corbyn and whether you were willing to vote for him. And when that when that exit poll came out, obviously it became clear that it had swung further in the other direction than it had been expected. That bounce back, that will they claim it at the last, didn't come in. And so, yes, I mean, I guess my overall reaction is it's nice to have a government with a majority, but I really, really hope that this government pulls its socks up and deals with the problems that this country has.
And we'll get into those in a minute. Not all of them, obviously, because we're time poor. But Lee, do you agree with that? Do you think this was about Jeremy Corbyn, or do you think this was about getting Brexit done? Do you think this was about the fact that perhaps the areas that voted to leave felt as though, again, no one was listening? Are people just fed up and just wanted to go with whatever would get things moving?
Honestly, Georgie, I think it's all of those things. I think there was a bit of people just simply couldn't imagine Jeremy Corbyn being Prime Minister. So we had that kind of chunk of people. We've got a chunk of people that are staunchly Labour supporters, but supported Brexit, especially in the northern areas, and they've gone out and they're voted. And actually, I watched that exit poll come through last night. I was pacing up and down a couple of minutes to go, and I was like, oh, you know, it's always quite exciting. It's actually one of the most exciting things I find, actually, at the election night. It's always kind of, it's such a unique, unusual.
The exit poll,
and it's, I find it fascinating. I guess all the data crunching and the job that they do, you know, it's just incredible how accurately they managed to predict it on the whole. And I was watching the brilliant BBC coverage of it all last night, and watching some of those northern seats go, talking about seats that have been Labour since creation, 100 years, some of those seats. I never, ever could have imagined ex-mining communities going from red to blue. I mean, honestly, even saying it out loud seems quite strange. But all you can say really is, you know, Brexit, obviously a huge factor. But the other factor is, you know, I think people prefer Boris Johnson to Jeremy Corbyn. I think that is the simple message that we've got. And actually, talking about who our local MPs are, so Simon's got Jeremy Corbyn. I've got the polar opposite of Marc Francois, the staunch Brexiteer, who, you know, it got something like 72-odd% of the vote in the constituency in which I live. I mean, absolutely bonkers. But I think now what I would say from this point now, obviously, the Conservative Party have got to come in. They've got to promise to do what they've said they're going to do. Their manifesto, as we mentioned a couple of weeks ago, was quite light on detail. So I'm going to guess Brexit out of the way first is the plan. Then I'm going to guess there's going to be some sort of budget, etc., where some more of these plans perhaps are going to get flashed out and more things are going to come onto the boil. But the other thing that needs to happen now is that there needs to be a radical overhaul of the Labour Party, in my opinion. There needs to be a credible, strong opposition that is going to hold a Conservative government in the next 5 years to account. Who that leader is going to be is massively important for the direction of this country, in my opinion, because without a strong opposition, with Lib Dem, Labour, almost like people struggling, there's a lot of people that just simply would refuse to vote Tory. Now, some of that seems to have changed with these northern seats, but that Lib Dem, Labour kind of people will go for one or the other. One of these needs to come out of all of this with a strong leader, a strong plan, somewhere where the politically homeless can go once more and hold a Conservative government to account. Whether that's going to happen, some of the noises that are coming from the Labour Party, and almost like, oh, it's the media's fault, or it's not. The fault is, it's Jeremy Corbyn. He's just unelectable. Can't we just see that? Is it not complicated?
Is it all of that? Is it a lot of it's got to do with things like the momentum movement,
exactly,
perhaps pushing something? Perhaps
exactly.
There's a lot of things that we can blame a lot of things there. And Simon, like you said, a strong majority, obviously, if you want to get policies through, it is, I guess, a good thing. Markets like stability, all that sort of thing. But as Lee points out, it does show a paucity of opposition. And for strong, robust politics in this country and for people to go somewhere and feel they have a political home, perhaps, we're losing that, or we've lost that. I mean, we talk about Jo Swinson. She had to step down. How was it for the Lib Dems?
Well, not great. Not great compared to where they were hoping to be when this election kicked off. But I think that they took out their shotgun and blew both their feet off right at the start with their crazy, we're just going to revoke Brexit policy. That was so foolish, because what it meant is that all of those people who don't really want to leave the EU, maybe they probably didn't vote for it, or maybe they did vote for it and they thought, oh, maybe we shouldn't be leaving, maybe I made the wrong choice, but who thinks that because we did vote for it, we should leave, were suddenly faced with the prospect of not being able to vote for the Liberal Democrats. Say they didn't want to vote for the Tories because they got us into this mess and they've not done a spectacularly good job of dealing with it over the last few years. They don't want to vote for Jeremy Corbyn and John McDonnell because they don't agree with their ideological motives. And let us not make any mistakes. They wanted to completely remake the economy. John McDonnell has made no secret about that. I like John McDonnell. I think he's a good guy. I think he's a thinker. I don't agree with him, but he has made no secret of that stuff. But they couldn't vote Lib Dem because the Lib Dems had come up with what many saw as a completely undemocratic policy. So you've got people going, well, what am I going to do now? So I think they shot themselves in the foot. I think what I would really love to see is a shift away from the tribalism or that we've seen in recent years.
This has been really nasty, though, hasn't it?
Too really nasty. So obviously there's this element of the silent Tory voter, and I think that's becoming more pronounced. So it's always been there because it's always been, well, if you're a Tory, you're a bit wicked, you know, you're a bit self-interested. If you're Labour, you've got a big heart kind of thing.
You've got tweets saying, you know, kids are dying on floors, et cetera, because of Tory cuts. Of course you're not going to go in.
But this has always been the case. But now social media has made this much worse, right? So my Facebook feed, my Twitter feed is full of people. Twitter is largely to do with like work, the media, that kind of bubble. Facebook's, you know, friends kind of thing, family. But it's very much full of people pumping out Labour messages, Labour propaganda, and the suggestion that if you vote Tory, you're evil. Right. And I don't think that that's doing anyone. I don't think that's really winning many people over. But it means that nobody would ever post on their Facebook feed. You wouldn't get many people posting on their Facebook feed, do you know what? Actually, I don't agree with John McDonnell and Jeremy Corbyn. And, you know, I think the Tories are the best choice. Mm. You know, the vitriol that you could expect to get from people. And I'm saying that as someone who's... I'm not going to talk about how I voted, but I did not vote for the Conservative Party. Mm. So I think that...
talk about how you voted there. So
yeah.
I'll talk about how I didn't vote.
Okay? So I'm not talking from a vested interest there, right?
Yeah.
But the tribalism and the Punch and Judy show, it would be very nice to see an end to that. And I think, ultimately, Labour put out a very, very detailed manifesto and a very, very detailed funding document. They wanted to dramatically raise taxes, dramatically increase spending. They said it was fully costed. There was an awful lot of giveaways in there for an awful lot of people. Mm. And they still lost the election by a long margin. That was not just down to their Brexit policy. Okay, their Brexit policy was muddled, and it would have been nice to have seen Jeremy Corbyn own it a bit more, as in say, I'll go negotiate a better deal and then I'll back my own deal, rather than, and then I'll sit on the fence and be an honest broker, which I'm not sure many people were buying. But I still think even then it wasn't a kind of, we're going to revoke it. You know, it wasn't a push, it wasn't a completely push the leave vote away thing. It was, there's two things, there's two parallel tracks going on there as to why all these people in these constituencies that have never been Tory, or these big swing constituencies, have voted Tory. And you can bet an awful lot of them will have walked into that polling station holding their nose and done it.
Yeah.
But what they will be hoping now is that money that the Conservatives have promised for the NHS comes through, and that money and that support that the Conservatives have promised for the rest of the country that hasn't seen the bounce back from the financial crisis like London and the commuter belt, that comes through as well. And I think they have the opportunity now to actually really do something good. And Boris Johnson thinks he's a great leader. Boris Johnson thinks he's a great man. Boris Johnson, if you're listening to this podcast, which I hope you do.
I'm sure he does.
I mean, you know,
right
maybe at some point over the next week. Use that big majority to prove all those people wrong who think you're a joker and that you won't deliver.
Yes, I think his ego will save the day, because he wants to be remembered as a great leader. So I'm banking on Boris Johnson's ego there. But I will get much more into the manifesto, and granted it was light on detail. But what we think, knowing the Conservatives, is going to happen, particularly for the pound in our pocket and the pound generally, I want to talk about that. But, you know, we had, as Simon sort of pointed out, I love your quizzical look there.
I wonder what direction
this
will go.
Where are we heading?
There's so many directions.
There's a couple of issues I just want to sort of put to bed, if only.
Okay.
But one of them, what was Brexit? I mean, it seems Labour sort of prevaricated, or Jeremy Corbyn, for such a long time that it almost became a party of, let's just not talk about Brexit.
Just sit on the fence.
Liberal Dems were almost could rename themselves the anti-Brexit party.
Exactly,
then we had the
yeah.
Brexit party. And I suppose the Tories were the only one that sort of covered both. But in terms of Brexit and this get Brexit done message that, you know, I'm going to be dreaming about forever until it's done, are we likely to get it done now? Because a lot of people will be thinking, well, we voted for it now, boom. It's going to be done by what? A couple of weeks?
Well, yep. do you know, Georgie, Boris has got an oven-ready deal. Have you heard that one?
I have seen it. I've seen the little...
He's only said it about 500 times over the course of a couple of weeks.
Which... interestingly, again, is another three-word slogan.
Yeah, three-word slogans
three
seem
word
to be the key.
Oven-ready deal.
Oven-ready deal. I think the likelihood is now... I mean, look, Boris Johnson has called this election to get a majority, to get weed out the MPs from the Conservative Party who wanted to remain in Europe and were basically dragging their heels and voting against the deal that both he and a different deal that Theresa May got through, you know, with... chatting with the EU and to get it through. So you'd think now, with a majority Conservative government, that a deal will get voted through. I'd be very, very surprised from this juncture if that doesn't happen. But, Georgie,
yeah, I know.
What's the saying, a long time in politics or whatever? I mean, you know, it's like, who knows? But I genuinely would be very surprised if Brexit doesn't happen from this point. But what the actual question is what kind of Brexit?
Yeah.
And will we be seeing a no-deal Brexit at the end of next year? Or will Boris come through with this promise for his deal, a softer Brexit, come the end of January? I would have thought that that is the likelier option.
Does it give him, though, a sort of stronger hand almost? Because if you are going to go and try and not negotiate a deal, but get a deal across the line, having a majority of 78 is going to put you in the best position. Isn't that what Theresa May, oopsie-daisy, tried to do before and that didn't work out too well?
Yes, it does. And so if you look at Brexit and the deal that we may end up with, I would fully expect Boris Johnson to now take us out of the EU by the 31st of January. Mm-hmm. It'd be a turn up for the books if he didn't do that, wouldn't it? But it's
don't
then
rule out another election before then or another.
Theresa May's got to come back.
Yeah. I sincerely hope we don't have another one for 5 years. So then we've got this end of the year deadline. Except it's not the end of the year, because we need to agree that transition arrangement, not the transition arrangement, we've got that. We need to agree that what it's going to look like after the transition arrangement in advance. So foolishly, they've set themselves another deadline, which, when you look back at the problem caused by the triggering of Article 50, was a pretty dumb move, and I really don't think that they needed to do that. I think that was a bit daft. I think they would have still got the Brexit vote, even if they hadn't have done this promise. So then you look at, well, what does he do? Because he's not as reliant on the ERG anymore, the hardline Brexiteers. Does he negotiate a softer Brexit deal? Does he swing back towards a closer relationship with Europe? Or does he go all guns blazing for this free trade deal with the US? Now, what I would expect to happen to the pound, for example, and the stock market, is the pound bounced last night, 2% on the exit polls. It held on to those gains overnight. I would expect the pound to continue to grind a bit higher. There's been suggestions it might get up to $1.40. Then we're going to see what happens after the 31st of January. Now, if we start seeing talk of a shift towards a more EU-friendly deal, a more trade-friendly deal with the EU, then I would expect probably the pound to continue rising. I would expect that to give some buoyancy to those UK-focused companies in the stock market. The pound rising will dent the big overseas earners because their earnings get flattered by a lower pound. If all of a sudden we start seeing hardline, no, we're going to go all out and pursue a US trade deal, that's the line of more volatility. That's where, even with a big majority, he's going to start facing considerably more opposition to it. And then you're going to start seeing more wobbles for the pound, more of this kind of Brexit uncertainty and wobbles going on. The question is, which way does he go now?
Indeed. Well, let's focus on the pound then. What happened?
It went up.
Unsurprisingly. Yes.
Did it soar, Simon?
Okay, there's a lot of times the pound is described as soaring and it didn't really soar. Okay. I think it did soar last night. I'm going to say it soared.
It surged 2%.
It put in one of those lovely little charts where it just suddenly goes up in a straight line. Mm-hmm. And then it pretty much held on to most of those gains overnight. So that means that we're a little bit better off. The pound is probably the closest thing you get to the sort of stock market for the UK.
Explain how it works and why it's significant.
If the UK was listed on the stock market, it would be the pound kind of thing. It's how much confidence people have in the UK. And stability, certainty, that really helps. The idea that there's some certainty on Brexit now for 5 weeks. added to the certainty that we're not going to have the economy remade along the lines of a socialist economy, which is a big thing for companies and people and stuff like that. You know, it would be a very radical change. That has delivered that bounce in the pound.
And you expect that to what, Lee?
Well, at the moment, it's trading at a dollar to about $1.34, $1.35, around that ballpark. And I was listening to an economist this morning saying that gains beyond $1.35 are quite unlikely until the next phase of Brexit is kind of finalised, which is what we're probably going to hear quite a bit of in the next couple of weeks. I believe that Parliament isn't going to be closing down for Christmas. That's what I've heard. And House of Lords is going to be open as well and just get all of this kind of stuff done. Whether or not that happens remains to be seen. But having a look back, I mean, this pound, looking at the pound against the dollar, it's still way off how it was performing against it at the start of 2018, for example. Mm. It's still quite a way off of that. Before the referendum in 2016, 2014, it was as high as $1.71. So it was still quite way off those kind of figures. But as Simon says, as more of this detail sort of comes out and we kind of know what Brexit is going to look like, is it going to be a Brexit in which we are trading more with Europe than perhaps other areas? There's a lot of what ifs. Mm-hmm. So it's very difficult to say if it's going to soar another 2% in the next juncture of time.
And it's worth noting on that trade deal element, so this talk of a US trade deal. So if we knocked up a US trade deal, it would obviously be seen as a good thing for the UK. But there's not an awful lot of people who buy the idea that ditching the EU in return for a trade deal with the US is going to be a major economic positive for the UK. It would be a economic positive for the UK to get a US trade deal, seeing as we are actually leaving the EU. But there's not a lot of people who buy the idea that we would end up in a better and more prosperous position than we were before the Brexit vote.
OK, that's the pound. You mentioned stock market there. Expected utilities, obviously. We talked about the nationalisation of particularly house builders, banks, those sorts of things. Expected them to post big gains. Did they? How's that looking?
Yes. This morning, as I was on my way in, I was thinking, right, what's it all going to be about today? And it was all going to be about the Boris bounce.
The Boris bounce.
That's what it is. That's what all the talk's going to be in Moneyland, is the Boris bounce. And the stock market delivered. At the time of recording, the FTSE's up about, FTSE 100's up about 1.7%. FTSE All Shares up, the broadest measure of the UK stock market. The FTSE All Shares up about 2.3%. The FTSE 250 bounced 4%. And the big gainers have been those companies that have been beaten down by the prospect of uncertainty and a Jeremy Corbyn socialist government. Mm. So we've got house builders, we've got banks, we've got TalkTalk putting in an appearance in the top risers.
Okay.
So is anything that people, utilities, all that kind of stuff, and those things are expected to probably benefit over the coming months. So there's been a lot of comment coming out from the investment industry, from fund managers saying UK shares, particularly UK-focused companies, are cheap. They've been undervalued because of the weight of worry on their shoulders, and now's the time to buy. We're also seeing, you know, talk of a Boris bounce in the property market, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a moment. Mm-hmm. But in a sort of shift between those two things, I would say people should swallow this one with a little bit of caution. Just because there's this bit of buoyancy and everyone's bouncing around today kind of thing, apart from all the people who are devastated.
Twitter, basically.
Apart from Twitter, yeah. That doesn't mean that it's going to continue. This was an expected thing. There's people just going, right, quick, buy these things because they're going to go up. The fundamental problems underlying various parts of our economy, in, for example, the housing market, are not solved. Mm. And there's going to be a lot of talk about house prices bouncing, but it ain't just Brexit and Jeremy Corbyn that's been weighing on house prices.
Lee?
I was looking this morning, actually, and I say at a time of recording, obviously, we're recording this at like 11:30, so things can change quite a lot over the course of the day. But I was looking at the top 20 risers of the FTSE 350 as a whole this morning. 8 of the top 20 risers were house builders. So Taylor Wimpey, Barrett, Berkeley, Persimmon, Bellway, Bovis, Crest Nicholson, all in that top 20. And then you had some of the banks were in there, Barclays, RBS. Then you had a mix of like utilities, like Simon says, like TalkTalk, because we had the whole talk of perhaps broadband basically becoming nationalised and everyone just getting it for free. So obviously that bumped up.
Which would put a serious dent into TalkTalk's broadband-based business model.
Exactly. And energy firms as well had a bit of a bounce this morning. I like to call it the Boris boom. Which I imagine is a sort of like youthquake aftershock, and there's the Boris boom. So SSE and Centrica were also in that list because they were the sort of companies that were potentially under threat if Corbyn managed to get into power. So how long-lived this will be remains to be seen.
Yeah.
We're on a Friday before the weekend, and we're just coming up to Christmas. Everything about this election has been unusual, so it will be kind of interesting to see what direction the stock market goes in from here and what companies do well off the back of it. Perhaps as well as, you know, the house builders, I'm guessing, are confident that the Tory plans that always get sort of banded about that they're going to build 300,000 homes a year might actually happen. But if that is the case, I hope we are not going to see more of this kind of shoddily built homes that that we've spoken about on podcasts past, and this whole leasehold scandal and how people have been trapped in. I know there's been moves to stop that from happening from now on, but what about those people who already have? And those are sort of the domestic agenda now needs to start coming onto the forefront. We've had years of Brexit wrangling, a load of Brexit nonsense. Part of me just wonders why the Conservative Party just didn't put Boris in charge instead of Theresa May at that juncture. Maybe now we would be having a completely different conversation.
Coulda, woulda, shoulda.
All you can say is it's going to be such an interesting next couple of months. God, politics has been mad, hasn't it? It has been mad.
It's been mad. And I'd like to think that, now we can kind of get on with some of the domestic issues as
exactly.
well.
Exactly. I think a budget.
Are we expecting one soon?
Well, there was meant to be one, wasn't there? And then they kind of canned it, and then, Boris threw out another election, and I'm pretty certain.
Early February.
Yeah,
start of February.
There right. we go.
Get Brexit done first, to quote a phrase.
And, where have you heard that one?
And then get budget done.
The Valentine's budget.
Yeah, they're talking about maybe earlier than actually. I think they're talking about maybe sort of around about the 5th or 6th or something like that. And I wouldn't be surprised to find a few things in that budget that weren't in that wafer-thin manifesto that was put out. Perhaps
there's wiggle room, isn't it, in a wafer-thin manifesto?
Wiggle room, and I think maybe that there's some stuff, perhaps the one that people are expecting is stamp duty cut. They probably didn't want to put a stamp duty cut for the higher end of the market in their manifesto because it would be seen to be benefiting the rich.
Yeah.
There's a very good argument for cutting stamp duty, and it's about getting the property market moving and removing the kind of punitive levels of tax that there are at certain points, that then, there is a trickle-down effect, because if the people at the top aren't buying houses, then they're not selling houses to someone a rung down, who isn't selling their house to someone a rung down, and it does filter all the way down. I would expect that perhaps there might be a bit of a stamp duty cut. And that is one thing that could stem the expected property market Boris bounce in the new year.
Well, let's stick to that, shall we? Because I want to go through personal finances and what we can expect, and property and buying a house, obviously, well up there. And we did have the prediction, didn't we, by the Tony Blair Institute for Global Change. House prices predicted... It just rolls off the tongue, that, doesn't it? House prices predicted to rise by 26%, they said, by 2030 in the event of a Tory victory, which, of course, we got. They said it would be 19% if Labour win. So, obviously, that's not good news for first-time buyers, for people wanting to buy, etc. But we did get a lot of... I'd say a lot of promises. No, we certainly didn't. We got a half-a-thin idea. But we do know Conservative have passed and what they're trying to achieve, I imagine. So we've got things like a lifetime fixed-rate mortgage for first-time buyers with as little as 5% deposit guaranteed until they bought the property outright. This first home scheme, give a 30% discount on new homes, build a million new homes over the next 5 years. Is that you there, snorting Lee?
where are they going, Georgie?
What are we going to have in terms of property? You were sort of about to say something there in terms of the house price rising there, Simon.
Yeah, I could give you a different line on that story that makes for a not-so-interesting headline.
What?
House prices predicted to rise in line with inflation over the next 10 years. 26% over
exactly,
10 years
yeah, it's not
is
much.
About 2% a year.
When you compare
it's
to the last decade.
It's just over 2% a year, 19%. It's really not that much.
It's a better way of putting
it. It sounds a lot, and these figures get bandied around whenever the house price reports are put out, but I think it's always important to break it down into what's that averaged out over the years, and that's really not that much.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the stratospheric house price gains we've been used to. To put it into context, house prices have risen by 42% over the past decade. And that's actually, even then when you break it down, not a huge amount. It's about 3.5% to 4% a year.
Yeah.
It would be really good if house prices don't go up by lots over the next decade. I think the problems with the housing market are obviously there's a supply issue. Then there's the question of where are we going to build all these new homes. But also there's an affordability issue. House prices are too high. Mortgage rates are very, very low at the moment. And even then, people are struggling to buy houses. I wouldn't expect this sudden house price bounce that the property industry has been getting itself very excited about this morning.
But Lee, do you think there's going to be more help for first time buyers? They're going to continue.
Yeah, that'll be the rhetoric. I think it'll continue going. I know the help to buy ISA has now been axed, but you know, the lifetime ISA is obviously for those aspirational homeowners. We're seeing record low mortgage rates. That's probably going to continue into 2020. And you know, how do you keep young voters on side? Make them homeowners. So yeah, I think we'll definitely see more of the same.
Slightly linked to that, and also linked to the stamp duty argument, Simon, with the rich inheritance tax. So the amount was due to rise under the Tories to 1 million next year. We presume that's going to stay. Any other changes to inheritance tax?
Yes, that will be from April, and it's as we're on our way to clawing our way up to £1 million due to the slow addition of George Osborne's own home allowance, which is if you own your own property and you leave it to a direct descendant. Maybe we'll just get Sajid Javid raising it up to £1 million. Certainly the own home allowance has come in for a lot of criticism. There's actually an Office of Tax Simplification review that's been done into inheritance tax that says it's a bit of a mess, comments on the fact that it's one of the most hated taxes, even though most people don't end up paying it. Could be that with a big majority, the Tories just go, right, let's just get it up to that million that we promised ages ago. Labour were going to remove the own home allowance, so it would go down to £650,000 for a married couple or civil partners, or £325,000 for an individual. What they didn't put in their manifesto was something that was trailed earlier this year in the Land for the Many report, which was bringing in £125,000 lifetime gift allowance, and any money you got above that from any other source throughout your entire life would be taxed at income rates. I think that one looks a fair way off now.
All right, we're going to stick with tax, Lee, if that's all right. We did have the Tories pledging to hike the threshold for national insurance contributions from £8,632 to £9,500, reckoning that they'll save around £100 for 31 million workers. The ultimate aim, though, they say, to raise the threshold to 12,500, saving workers £445 a year. Sounds a little bit more healthy. Also, they were promising that neither income tax nor VAT will rise during the next government. So assume we'll get the same as is?
Yeah, I mean, that was pretty much the most meaty thing, I would argue, that was in the manifesto. The most sort of like, you know, this is definitely what we're going to do kind of thing. Mm. When Boris Johnson kind of leaked that. I'm not sure he was meant to leak it when he leaked it. but yeah, that's right. I think a couple of other things that will definitely be on people's radars, things like fuel duty.
Yep.
So fuel duty frozen for a number of years now. We've had this whole push towards, you know, electrified vehicles. Could we see that start to rear its ugly head? Another one that the Tories have been sort of tinkering with in the last sort of 5-6 years or so is the insurance premium tax as well, which has been added onto insurance bills. So it's meant to be a tax for insurers, but ultimately it gets passed on to our bills. It's kind of been nudging up. It's just almost like an easy thing that they managed
like
to
quite
find.
Quite a lot has gone up, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it has, yeah. So whether that continues under this new majority Conservative government, it remains to be seen. But I think a lot of the meat and bones of all this kind of stuff, as we mentioned earlier in the show, is probably that manifesto was paper thin. I mean, it was almost like Boris Johnson didn't want to have any traps to fall into. So let's just keep it as basic and as vanilla as possible.
Yeah.
But Boris Johnson isn't a vanilla kind of guy. So I'd be interested to see, you know, when we get that budget. That is going to be huge. It's potentially 5 years of a Conservative majority government.
Mm.
There's got to be some big, bold things that are going to be done in there, surely. I know we've spoken about things like the NHS. The NHS, I should add, throughout this election, especially towards the end, that's where a lot of it got very toxic, very nasty, didn't it? You know, people just care about the NHS, and rightly so. Totally understand
it's
that.
It's their family, it's health.
Exactly,
you know.
Yeah. It's whether, I think a lot of people are concerned about how things like doctor surgeries and hospitals are being run. I think there needs to be some sort of reform. Nothing to do with, this is, by the way, is nothing for me saying privatisation or anything along those lines. I think more like reforms as in how some of these hospitals are being managed. It's so hard, we've had this conversation before, but it's so hard to get a doctor's appointment. The GP.
Difficult.
Local GP practices are absolutely in crises, you know, and that has a knock-on effect to NHS. So something has to be done there. We've had a promise for more police officers. You know, the Tories have cut police numbers by quite a bit you know, and
also social care as well.
Social care, another one. You know, it's been a lot of kicking the can down the road. We've had some papers written during Conservative and the coalition governments with some very sensible ideas and options outlined in those sort of proposals, but nothing's come to play with it. And we have a social care crisis in this country. Mm. You know, people are struggling to get proper care when they get older. There's more people getting, you know, things like dementia. A lot of these issues have been just been kicked and kicked and kicked down the road because of Brexit. And this is what my argument is now, is that, and for, I'm guessing, a lot of people, is, you know, once Brexit's hopefully out of the way...
I thought you were going to say, get Brexit done.
I'm not saying,
like,
get
no,
Brexit
Lee.
Done. I'm saying, get Brexit done. There's a question mark after it. Get Brexit done is what it should be. But after that, it's all of these issues. And, you know, we've got these constituencies now, constituencies up north that have always been Labour. They're going to be expecting something to be happening in these places. Mm. There's too much focus on business and things in places like London. It needs to be spread out more. You know, all of these kind of things. I'm expecting some really bold proposals from Mr. Johnson. One thing I would love to see, and I'm sure regular listeners would hear this, but something to be done about train fares.
Lee, I was going to ask you about train fares, but I did want to point out that when I said, please don't say get Brexit done, it wasn't a political statement. It was just the fact that it's going around in my head as this, get Brexit done, get Brexit done.
It's not get Brexit done today, George. Get breakfast done. That was the headline.
I agree with there, Lee. So, we didn't have any promises on trains. We did have the protection of free bus passes for state pensions if we're talking about transport. In terms of social care, just to rattle through some of these, the Tories have offered $5 billion towards social care over 5 years. Household bills, which you sort of touched on a bit earlier, keeping that energy price cap, also $6.3 billion earmarked for home improvements, so grants that could be used towards things like better insulation or more efficient boilers, which I know we've spoken about in the past in low-income households. Also, family finances, so expected to stick to their plans to increase 30 hours of free childcare for 3 and 4 year olds from 38 to 48 weeks a year, saving working parents, they reckon, around £1,410 per child. A little bit about pensions, though, as well. And the reason I say it is not for the policies perhaps that the Conservatives put forward, but perhaps the ones that Labour put forward. And we spoke about WASPI women. They would get some relief, and it doesn't look likely that that would now happen, now the Conservatives there. The future of the triple lock, a pensions dashboard, pension tax reform, Simon?
Well, the triple lock is in there. That's one thing that they have promised to keep. Yes, I would say it's probably unlikely the WASPI women are going to get any major help. They've been through a court battle and they didn't win the most recent round of that. I think the government will just leave it to that ongoing battle. I think that in terms of pension tax relief, probably we might see an easing off of the pressure to reform that. That one just goes round and round and round in circles. The principle is that you pay into a pension from untaxed income. The problem is when you put the principle into action, obviously if you earn more money, you get a greater benefit from it. If you pay a higher rate of tax, you get more money back. Mm. I've argued before you should retain that principle, because once you start meddling around with the numbers, it will just get chipped away. They need to deal with this taper relief stuff that's caused the problem in the NHS and is causing problems elsewhere. Probably I'd do something about the lifetime allowance. Whether they'll do all those things, I don't know. Pension dashboard, yep, that's meant to be happening as well. I think pensions is a big issue. Pensions is a huge issue for our readers, whether they are pensioners, whether they are coming up to retirement, whether they are saving for retirement. And no tinkering would be a good idea on that one.
Finally, on the personal finance, the savings and investment, and I think we're reading all the predictions being that the base rate would be expected to stay at 0.75 through 2020 and rise to 1% the following year if we got a Conservative government, and it would not be the case were it Labour. What do we expect to happen to the base rate? Ha ha, our favourite game, Lee. Our favourite game!
Oh no, you didn't.
It'll stay exactly the same forevermore.
How long is a piece of string? I think that it'd be unlikely to go up or down next year. That's my prediction. And if we're talking about things like savings rates being linked to it, savings rates are not going to go anywhere. I think it's going to be it's not going to be a Boris bounce in savings rates, unfortunately.
Boris
boom in savings rates, I'm afraid. What will continue, I would suspect, into 2020, on the flip side of that is record low mortgage rates. So, you know, you don't really have one without the other. We've also got record low personal loan rates. Some of the personal loan rates are absolutely incredible at the moment, incredibly low. Unfortunately, that's all bad news for savers because a lot of it's intrinsically linked. I reckon Simon might have a different view on interest rates, perhaps.
I think if we get Brexit done,
stop it,
and things go relatively smoothly, and we do see a bounce in the economy off the back of certainty, we've still got very low unemployment. We have still got wages rising at a good rate. If you do see a pickup, then maybe we will see interest rates rise, perhaps by a quarter point next year. But I'd caveat that with all the things that could go wrong. And I would also say, bear in mind, right, that if he's going to be the Prime Minister for the next 5 years, there is an almost certainty that Boris Johnson is going to end up being Prime Minister through a recession. Ooh. So it's not all like, woohoo, we're in the sunlit uplands, you know.
I'm going to take that off the podcast and use it as my new ringtone. Do you want to do that again? That was amazing. That was awesome. Where'd you go from there? Investments, just the final one, Simon, if you would. Nearly three quarters of investors say that Conservative, or have said that Conservative victory would be the best outcome for their money. I mean, you've now talked about recession and stuff, but what do you think in terms of investing?
Well, I think that there's a lot more things that can affect their money than what happens with the government of this country. And if your investments are so focused on only the UK, that the government of this country is the defining factor in what happens to them, I would advise you to perhaps diversify around the world. It's perceived as being the better option for investors because of the socialist policies that Jeremy Corbyn and John McDonnell were going to remake the economy under and nationalise various things, take 10% of company shares, give them to workers, but then take some of the dividends and only give £500 to the workers themselves, and then blah, 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 all these other things we've been talking about weeks and weeks and weeks. That's why investors think it'll be better for them.
All right. I do have one final issue that I want to cover with you, because I was going to do it earlier before anyone complains that we've left it until the end. But we did get on to the pound. But I do want to ask you about the SNP making big gains across Scotland. Nicola Sturgeon saying the country had sent a clear message on a second independence referendum. It would be remiss of me not to talk about this. And I do want to talk a little bit about this. Is it over for the union?
God, we both took deep breaths.
Can I just say something, right? I think Scotland sent a clear message that they wanted to vote for the SNP. Boris and not Jeremy. I'm not entirely certain whether you can say that that is entirely a vote for Scottish independence. But also, it's not just the Scottish who were involved in this. There are some other countries within the Union who are equally entitled to a view on the matter of whether it would be a good idea for Scotland to leave. And so maybe you have to take into account how they voted as well. I mean, obviously they didn't get the choice of voting for the SNP. Maybe if the SNP had stood everywhere, they'd be they'd be leading the government. I don't know.
Yeah, you never know. Sort of. Lee, as you took a deep inhale of breath.
Well, actually, I remember saying on this podcast a couple of weeks ago that the only person that I was listening to on any of the leader debates that actually came across as even relatively sensible, if I strip away the second referendum argument, was Nicola Sturgeon. I thought actually she had a very good campaign and just kind of did actually speak quite a lot of sense on quite a lot of things. I don't really see a second referendum. I'm about as far away from Scotland as it goes, but I feel like a second referendum, really, you know, just because you didn't get the result you wanted the first time round, you know, do you want to push a second referendum and, you know, make everyone divide again in Scotland? You know, to be fair, that the referendum in Scotland was very kind of amicable, you know, compared to something like Brexit, and it kind of happened, and anyone would have respected whatever way it would have gone, I believe. But just to keep pushing the second referendum thing, the reality is in Scotland is that I would argue that the vast majority of Scottish people probably didn't really want Boris Johnson as Prime Minister, and when Theresa May and Ruth Davidson is the key here for the Tory losses in Scotland. But Ruth Davidson was actually a popular Scottish Tory. It's not a sentence you can say very often. And then, you know, Labour was always, Scotland was Labour That's the thing. And then over the last decade, it's been chipped away and chipped away. And people didn't want to vote for Jeremy Corbyn. And that leaves you basically the option of the SNP if you're Scottish, doesn't it? What else, other option was there? If you didn't want Boris Johnson and you didn't want Jeremy Corbyn, you're going to vote SNP, aren't you? That's my view. You know, I'm not an expert on Scotland.
You look like you're about to say something, Simon, but no.
Not about Scotland, no.
No, do you want to just chip in anything else?
Well, I just guessed just to say that at the end of this, you know, we've got a majority government now. We haven't had one of those for a while. Not one with a big majority, certainly. But what I'd really like to see is the Conservative Party and Boris Johnson prove everybody wrong and prove everybody wrong in the right way. I'd like to see them do something about homelessness. I'd like to see them do something about in-work poverty. I'd like them to see do something about the north-south economic divide. I'd like them to see them do something about the NHS. I'd like to see them do something about public services. I would like them to get stuff done, not just Brexit. The stuff that we should have got done over the last 3 years. And to be honest, if that involves people like me paying a bit more tax, I've got no problem with that. And I know that a lot of people share that view. But I would really, really, really like them to prove people wrong on all of that stuff and on the environment and climate change.
Hear, hear, Simon. Get stuff done.
Get stuff done.
Wow, that was cheesy, wasn't it? Right, that's it. You can keep up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app. And if you have any comments or questions for the team or anything you'd like them to look into, Simon?
Email us at editor@thisismoney.co.uk, tweet us at thisismoney, or come to thisismoney.co.uk/podcast to join in the debate in the reader comments.
And if you like our podcast, why not rate us on iTunes? It helps people find us.